Hello, I want to welcome you to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. I'm Tom Cooper, and I am so glad you've joined me for today's lesson. Today we are talking about connecting with people at work. Lead Yourself First is your personal growth program. As Zig Ziglar said, you can have anything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want. And Lead Yourself First is your system to help you find and start using those tools that are going to help you get those people what they want, so you can get what you want. I work really hard to make sure that each of these lessons is able to stand on its own, that each one contains practical, interesting, and entertaining information so that you can take even one of these lessons and make it your focus for a whole season to help you develop mastery in a single area. Now, this lesson, like each lesson, is designed to bring you the best information, the best ideas that I can find on this topic, so you can use what we talk about to help get better results, because that's really what this is entirely about. Now, this program is designed to help you move up the ladder, to gain influence and gain respect among the team members on your team, and to be seen by one of your leaders as a catalyst, somebody who makes good things happen with your team. I believe in you, and I believe in your dream to grow. And I know there's a ton of potential inside you that can be unlocked and can deliver results for you. This entire program, Lead Yourself First, is based on the idea that each player on the team, that's you, has the ability to stretch and grow. And if you'll start right where you are, you're going to be amazed to see what results you can begin to create in your life. Now, before we jump into this lesson, I'm going to ask you today what I always ask you for all the lessons in this program. How are you going to act after this lesson? ACT is an acronym. It's apply, change, or teach. Apply. What can you use? What can you apply from today's session? I want to challenge you to be thinking about that as we go through our lesson. Change. What's something, based on what we talk about today, that you can change in your approach? And T, what's something you can teach? What can you share with a coworker or a significant other or your boss? How can you share some of this idea, the ideas from this lesson? Because we want to be a river, not a reservoir. Now, I look forward to every lesson in Lead Yourself First, but this one I particularly look forward to because I have learned through painful personal experience what happens when we overlook the human side of work. And I look forward to this lesson because I know that if I can leave you with just a couple of key ideas and you use them, you'll be able to do in weeks what it took me years to learn how to do. Now, over the next few minutes, we're going to unpack some incredibly valuable things when it comes to dealing with people. And I'm just making a commitment to you that if you will take one thing from our lesson today, just one, and put it into practice over the next 30 days, you're going to be amazed. Now, maybe you'll want to really dig in to get some additional help on this topic, and I've got something that I will share with you at the end of the lesson that is a way that you could go even deeper on this. Fair enough? Okay. Are you ready? 87% of success at work is because of your people skills. 87%. If you're not investing in connection with other people, I guarantee you it is harming your effectiveness. Just yesterday I was doing a workshop with a team, and one of the senior leaders in the organization said, "Look, I am not a people person." Well, I'm telling you right now, that fundamental belief that you don't want to deal with people, you don't like people, that is going to hold you back. It's going to reduce your performance. So here's what we're going to talk about in today's lesson. One, human connection is the heart of all productive work. Two, people work is the work. Working with the people is more important than the tasks. Tasks are secondary. And then the third piece we're going to talk about is six quick ways to make a connection with other people. I work with senior leaders in organizations all the time, and if there's one thing I hear most often, it's why can't people just do their job? Why can't people do their job? Well, I'll tell you, And this is going to be a little bit uncomfortable to hear, perhaps, but it's because we don't value people highly enough to invest in them or even invest in ourselves. And regardless of your position or your role, you've got the ability to make a difference in the lives of the people you work with. I'm going to camp on that for just one second here. If you, regardless of your position or role, you have the ability to make a difference in the lives of the people you work with. If you can communicate value to others, you're going to find they're more willing to deliver for you. But I've got a confession to make. I am an extrovert, but man, do I love getting tasks knocked out. It gives me great joy to see something that was on my to-do list and mark it off. Conversely, it's a bit of a gut punch to me when I think that something is done and it turns out to be not done and it goes right back on the to-do list. And I love getting stuff done so much that, well, it often gets in the way of my relationship with other people. And I can recall, to my embarrassment, how many times I've been in situations where I have focused so much on getting stuff done that I have stomped on people. And the problem is not just my delivery today. It's about the relationships that I build and the reputation that I've created about what kind of person I am to work with. And the studies are clear that they show that the people stuff is more important than the tasks. Human connection is the heart of all productive work. And I found that when I invested in the people side of things, when I connected with my team members, it dramatically improved my effectiveness. Conversely, when I focused on checking tasks off my task list and ignored the personness of the people on my team, my productivity plummeted. If I took care of people, they took care of tasks, and everybody was more productive and more happy. I want to share a story with you about how valuable kindness can be. You may have heard of the outdoor clothing company Polartec, that they make that material. The company is actually called Malden Mills, and the owner of the company is a deeply religious man named Aaron Feierstein. And on December 31st, 1995, his factory caught fire, and it burned to the ground. The factory employed 3,400 workers, and it was the main employer for two neighboring towns. The area once had many mills, but most had closed and moved to areas where they could pay people less money to work. And Mr. Feierstein felt that people should be able to be paid a decent wage, and so he decided he wasn't going to move his factory. Now, the fire occurred on his 70th birthday. What a birthday present, right? The workers believed that was the end of the line for their jobs. Surely, Mr. Feierstein would take the $300 million in insurance money and just call it quits. But while the smoke was still rising from the charred remains of his fire, he called his workers together in a school gymnasium and he spoke to them, and they were about to discover what kind of man they worked for. He announced he would not abandon them. He was going to rebuild the factory. He told them he was going to keep all 3,400 of them on the payroll for 1 month, and that each would get a $275 Christmas bonus. Once the factory was rebuilt, they would get their jobs back. Grown men wept in the audience as he spoke. After the first month ended, he paid them for another month. After the second month ended, he paid them for a third month. It cost him $1.5 million a week to do this. He also paid their hospitalization insurance. His employees responded by salvaging what equipment they could, and in temporary buildings got production up to what it was before the fire while the new factory was being built. Mr. Feierstein received much praise from around the country, but he said he only did what was the moral and right thing to do. He used his money to support his beliefs in God rather than make money his God. As each of you lives your life, try to remember Mr. Feuerstein's example and try to treat people you encounter with fairness and kindness. Feuerstein valued people over profits, and he's not alone. Some research has shown that nice guys get the best out of their subordinates. They surveyed 16,000 executives, and of those 16,000, 13% were high achievers. And here's what they found in common among those 13%, those high achievers. They tended to care about people as well as profits. They viewed their subordinates optimistically. They sought advice from their team, and they listened well. You see, it's not that Feuerstein didn't care about profits. It's that he valued people highly, and he was willing to sacrifice in the short term for the long-term outcomes. And that's something that all of us can consider. There's good data on how people being people-focused can make a big difference in teamwork, in productivity, in employee engagement, and morale. Building a positive work environment where we care about our other team members, it pays. And you don't have to be the boss to be able to make this kind of impact on others. You don't have to be the kind of guy who's paying $1.5 million a week to keep people employed. No, you can take your life today, the relationships you have today, and you can leverage those to be investing in other people. John Dewey said, "The deepest urge in human nature is the desire to be important." The desire to be important. This is such a big deal that most of Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is focused on tools and techniques to address that very need in people. And in today's lesson, I want to share with you a few gems from Carnegie's book. It's one of my favorite books. I read it about once a year because I forget so many of the good things that are included in that book. But this need to be valued by others, it often goes unmet. And many people are going through life with this need unmet, and it causes them to make choices that lead to bad outcomes. Thoreau famously said, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation." The fact is that most people are unfulfilled and are longing for appreciation. Do you want to be a person who's able to get the most from other people? Learning to address their core need is going to give you a serious performance edge. Philosopher William James said, "The deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated." Andrew Carnegie actually said, "Here is a gnawing and unfaltering human hunger, and the rare individual who honestly satisfies this heart hunger will hold people in the palm of his or her hand." Just think about that. If you can honestly satisfy the heart hunger of other people, you could hold people in the palm of your hand. And this has been proven true over and over and over again. One of the first employees in the United States to ever be paid over $1 million a year was a man by the name of Charles Schwab. And why in the world was he paid that much? In 1921, it was an insane amount of money. Schwab said his salary was based on his ability to deal with people. Now, if you are interested in trying to increase your income, I think this is somebody we ought to listen to. Schwab said, "I consider my ability to arouse enthusiasm among my people the greatest asset I possess. And the way to develop the best that is in a person is by appreciation and encouragement. There is nothing else that so kills the ambitions of a person as criticisms from superiors." We could spend the next several weeks just on that couple of sentences. Seriously, there is so much wealth in that. There's nothing else that so kills the ambitions of a person as criticisms from superiors. That is so powerful. And Schwab went on to say, and I want you to get this, "In my wide association of life, meeting with many and great people in various parts of the world, I have yet to find the person who did not do better work and put forth greater effort under a spirit of approval than under the spirit of criticism." I want to read that quote to you one more time. This is one of the highest paid employee in the United States in 1921, making over $1 million a year. "In my wide association of life, meeting with many and great people in various parts of the world, I have yet to find a person who did not do better work and put forth greater effort under a spirit of approval than under a spirit of criticism." And kindness is valuable. It is much more productive than criticism. as I was thinking about this lesson, I was reminded of a time. I was about 19 years old, and I was working as a server in a restaurant while I was in school. And there were several managers who oversaw the day-to-day operations, most of whom were not, like Charles Schwab. And I remember hearing, "If you got time to lean, you got time to clean," as if this was an inspirational message from on high. In general, I was a decent worker. I was polite. I showed up on time for work, and I had happy customers most of the time. I was decent at my job, and I had a decent reputation. I was probably among the higher performers in the environment. I was far from perfect, but I was somebody they could count on to deliver. And late one evening, a group of about 15 or 20 people was seated in my section, and I was scrambling. It was crazy busy for the next couple of hours as I was taking orders, refilling drinks, and making sure that everybody had everything they needed. Their food was cooked properly, it was served appropriately, they had the silverware, all the things that go with that. And I was super busy, and I decided that I was going to take a shortcut. Now, typically, as I was serving my guests, I would have multiple tables, and they'd be at different stages of their meals, and so I would have a little bit of time to kind of work through. But in this case, everything came at once. I took all the orders at once, all the drinks at once, all the food at once, all that kind of stuff. And so I decided that I would take a shortcut. I'd usually clear dishes and run them back to the dishwasher a little bit at a time, after the appetizers, after the entrees, after dessert, coffee. But this evening, I was tired, and I decided to set up a tray in the server area, and I would just pile up the plates. And over time, that stack of plates and cups and silverware got higher and higher, and I would rearrange them a little bit to get them to be more efficiently stacked on the tray. By the time that group of folks left, I collected my tip, and there was a veritable mountain of dishes piled high on that tray. It was definitely the biggest stack of dishes I'd ever created in my time as a waiter, and I made another fateful choice. Rather than carry the dirty dishes a little bit at a time to the kitchen, I chose to try to lift the entire tray and make one single trip to the kitchen. It was really a theme in my continuation of corner cutting. Why waste all that energy on multiple trips? Now, this restaurant, the management had done everything they could to reduce waste. They were trying to encourage us to be good stewards and to manage our costs appropriately. And one of the ways they did that was by helping us be more cautious when it came to the plates that we were working with. And they had a wall-sized diagram right next to the dishwashing station with an outline of each plate, each cup and saucer, and in bold type the cost of each item. They didn't want us to lose a plate or throw something away or break it. They wanted us to be careful because they were showing us that there was a direct relationship between our care for those things and the profitability of the restaurant. Now, back in the server station, I had squatted down next to that heaping tray full of plates, and I used all of my young leg and back muscles to lift the tray and heft it up to a balance point on my shoulder and one arm. I carefully navigated my way from the remote corner of the restaurant to the dishwashing station, and I was able to do that slowly and carefully and made it successfully there. Arriving in the kitchen, I began to use my free hand to set up a tray stand on which I planned to place that heavy tray. The flick of my wrist to deploy the tray stand was just the off-balance input my tray needed. I remember watching, to my horror, as I saw the stack of dessert plates at the very edge of the front of the tray begin to become unbalanced and then slip, and then a few of them fell off the front of the tray. Now, as those stoneware plates began their descent toward the tile floor, this small shift in the weight distribution was enough to cause the barely balanced heavy tray to tip over backwards. And I was powerless to stop what had now become inevitable. Dozens of plates met their demise on the merciless, hard tile floor below. The noise was astonishingly loud. Now, at this point, I was tired, I was sweaty, and I was surrounded by sharp, broken, dirty plates on the floor all around me. I began picking up the broken pieces and putting them in the trash can, and it took me quite a while to get through the debris. And only a plate or two was salvageable from the entire stack. At about the time I was close to maybe 75% done picking up the plates, I heard the door to the office down the hall shut loudly. I knew my manager was on her way to discuss with me what she had heard, and I knew I was in big trouble. I'd made a foolish choice, and I had been solely responsible for hundreds of dollars in destroyed plates. Now, the manager on duty that night was one I particularly liked, and I wasn't sure whether she'd still like me after what I had done, and I don't know whether she had studied any of Dale Carnegie's material, but as she approached me, she asked me one question. She said, "Did what I just think happen actually happen?" I was too scared to speak. I nodded. I mean, what was about to happen? She had me dead to rights. There was no escaping, no excusing what I had done. What would she do? Would I lose my job? Would she expect me to pay for those plates out of my pocket? She oversaw the situation, and she considered her options, and then she said, quietly and firmly, "Let's not let that happen again, okay?" And then she turned and left. I never heard anything more about it after that. I was stunned. Her mercy in that moment toward me was amazing, and I was grateful. She did not approach me with a spirit of criticism. And how do you think that affected my opinion of her? What do you think happened the next time she needed something from me? I can tell you that I was always grateful for her kindness. I knew how stupid I had been, and I knew the consequences to the company, and I fully expected that I would be yelled at, because every other manager would have done that very quickly and quite effectively. But their response would not have had the same impact on me as her quiet question and comments. She showed me kindness when I definitely needed it. I have never forgotten that moment or how I felt when she extended that grace to me. Kindness over criticism. It is incredibly effective. Remember what Schwab said? That people do better work and put forth greater effort under a spirit of approval. So what can we do to create a spirit of approval? Remember, you don't have to be the boss to do this. You can be the person who is the encouraging, affirming, approving person right now. What you need to do is look for ways to catch people doing something right. And I want to point this out on purpose right now. It is not enough to see it and acknowledge that it was right only in your mind. You need to say it out loud. Say it out loud. Be specific, be clear, and be vocal. That's what Dale Carnegie talks about in his book, and it's what Ken Blanchard talks about in his book, Whale Done. Blanchard notes that when it comes to training whales at SeaWorld, the trainers ignore all negative behaviors, and they praise and reward all positive ones. Time tested, this positivity approach works with these amazing ocean mammals, and it works with the human animal too. So what can you do to catch people doing something right? How can you begin to notice the good things they're doing? How can you recognize and appreciate them for their contributions, no matter how small they may seem to be at the time? It simply requires that you make it a priority to look for them doing it right, not look for them doing it wrong. And when you see something, say something. Bob Berg says, all things being equal, people do business with people they know, like, and trust. It's not that you have to be liked, it's just that it makes everything easier when people do like you. I don't have at my command the time to teach this in depth during this lesson, but I want to quickly share with you 6 ways to make that kind of connection with team members that will help you to be liked. Carnegie says, 1, become genuinely interested in other people. Become genuinely interested in other people. 2, smile. Be intentional about what your face looks like at work. 3, remember, I can't emphasize this one enough, remember that a person's name is to them the sweetest and most important sound in any language. 4, be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. 5, talk in terms of the other person's interest. And 6, make the other person feel important and do it with sincerity. Now, of these 6, I just want to take a moment to dig into one of them because I think it ties in nicely with the quotes from Charles Schwab that we've talked about earlier in today's lesson. How in the world can we make the other person feel important? Well, I have to say, I've never met anyone who would admit that they get up in the morning to do lousy work and set a goal of making people angry. And yet, we find ourselves feeling like that is exactly what the other person's been intending to do. But when you realize that no one starts out with a goal to be bad at their jobs or to intend to make you mad, it can help you start to look for the good things that they are already doing. Mary Kay Ash, the founder of Mary Kay Cosmetics, said, "Pretend that every single person you meet has a sign around their neck that says, 'Make me feel important.' Not only will you succeed in sales, you will succeed in life." Now, even the most seemingly unimportant person can be important to your work. I'm going to close this lesson with a story about Bob and the impact one conversation had on a business. Ron Burley told this story in Inc. magazine. Ron says, "In this business, we're often all about the numbers, occasionally to a fault. I'm not saying statistics and metrics aren't useful tools. Sometimes, however, the success or failure of an enterprise comes down to individual interactions, say a handshake or a phone call. Let me give you a good example. In 1995, I bootstrapped a tech company, Broadcast Software. We created digital audio and automation software for broadcast radio stations, and after 4 years, we had 16 employees and customers in 40 countries. But we were at a transition point. If companies need to grow or die, we were in need of a transfusion. We'd grown beyond my ability to fund future growth out of my back pocket, and it was time to get outside capital. It also turned out to be the time for the tech bubble to burst, and our potential funding sources instantly disappeared. I was a hands-on CEO. I had written the original software, and I knew many of our customers personally. And I told my employees the buck stopped with me, and I would be willing to speak with any customer they couldn't help or satisfy. If need be, they should even give out my personal number." So when my cell phone vibrated at 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning, I recognized the 618 area code as Southern Illinois, and that meant the caller was Bob, a crusty old-time radio engineer and the owner of a very small rural radio station near Mount Vernon. He'd purchased one of our systems several months before and had been struggling to get it up and running. Now, Bob's biggest problem was that he had never even used a computer before, and my support manager had more than once recommended we just give Bob his money back. But we had marketed our products as easy to use, and we could not abandon someone because they had found it otherwise. I climbed out of bed, I closed the door behind me, and I spent the next 2 hours coaching Bob on how to configure startup options for Microsoft Windows. It wasn't an issue with our software, but it was a problem for our customer, Bob, which made it our problem. At the end of the conversation, I thought we'd made a lot of progress. Bob was enthusiastic, and I was hopeful. And it was the last time anyone heard from Bob. He didn't call tech support, and he didn't call me. As time passed, I wondered whether we'd actually fixed the problem or whether he had just given up. I made a mental note to check in on him as soon as I'd figured out the bigger financial issues. But one situation was about to solve the other. Almost 6 months to the day after I'd hung up on the phone with Bob, I received another call. The chief of engineering of a major media company informed me the company had decided to standardize on our software across its entire chain of 300 radio stations. It would be the biggest order in our history, more than $4 million, and it would easily provide the capital we had been needing. This call was a complete surprise. We'd not pursued their business. In fact, it had been public knowledge that they were selecting one of our competitors. As it turned out, the reason for their mid-course change was Bob. That phone call with Bob saved our company. He hadn't given up on us. He loved us. Shortly after my call with him, that same media giant made an offer he could not refuse to buy his radio station, and Bob had stayed on as a consulting engineer. And not long after, a company meeting centered on their attentions to purchase our competitors' products, and Bob raised his hand at the back of the room. "Have you ever heard of Broadcast Software?" he asked. He told his new colleagues the story of our phone call and how we had stuck with him for months, even when the problems weren't really ours. Over lunch and then dinner, Bob sang our praises. At the end of the evening, he scribbled our website and contact information on a cocktail napkin and handed it to the chief of engineering. "Check these guys out," he said. "They are great." They did, and the rest was history. Our history. There's a moral to the story. Every customer needs to be treated with respect, and no customer should be left dissatisfied. I'm not saying that every customer call is crucially important, but some of them certainly are, and you never know which one might be your Bob. You see, Ron had made Bob feel important. Important enough for a two-hour phone call from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. to help him solve a problem that was unrelated to Ron's product, and he helped him get through it. What an impact that could have. Okay, it's almost time for us to wrap up and for you to work on your personal action plan. I want to share with you a quick summary. Remember, we started this conversation with a question I often get from senior leaders: why can't people do their dang job? Charles Schwab said, "I have yet to find the person who did not do better work and put forth greater effort under a spirit of approval than a spirit of criticism." Human connection is the heart of all productive work. People are the work. And we need to remember that. When we take care of people, the tasks take care of themselves. Now, kindness is one way to establish loyalty in your people. It builds relationship, and it helps them to feel really cared for. That restaurant manager, she instilled a deep loyalty in me, and I've never forgotten how she made me feel. When it comes to the people you're interacting with, can you catch them doing something right? And when you do, can you be intentional about saying it out loud? And finally, in today's lesson, we talked about six ways to make people like you. And one of them is to make the other person feel important, and to do that with sincerity. That's what Ron did with Bob, and it saved his company. So for you, your action plan, what's the one idea you can apply or change or teach? Now, maybe you're with your team. Maybe there's an opportunity to talk about what you can do to improve connection in the group there. Now, I mentioned that for those of you who are interested in going a little bit deeper on this, I've got a four-session mastermind coaching package on John Maxwell's little book, Relationships 101. This book encapsulates John's philosophy about people, and that's the philosophy that inspired me to become a better team member and ultimately a better leader. The cost for this coaching package is $249 a person, and these four sessions, you're going to dive into the core of relationships that can propel your work forward. It's a don't-miss program filled with practical ideas you can immediately use. If it sounds good to you, drop me an email, tom@brighthillgroup.com, tom@brighthillgroup.com. We'll get it set up. Thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I look forward to hearing from you next time.